Heading to CBC? Make sure to stop by booth 1989 to chat with the Brewbound team, check out our live podcast recordings, and find out about Brewbound's upcoming events. Have news to submit ahead of the show? Head to brewbound.com/submitnews to let us know about your latest updates.
Hey, welcome back to the Brewbound podcast. I'm Jessica Infante, and we've got a really great, really important conversation to share with you this week on the podcast. It's from this week's Brewbound Frontlines, which is our live-streamed weekly panel discussion featuring leaders from across the beer industry about how they've been navigating the turbulence caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. On the show this week, we highlighted three organizations and programs that are working to diversify the very male, very white craft beer industry. In the Brewers Association's most recent Brewery Operations Benchmarking Survey from 2018, data shows that more than 88% of brewery owners are white, and just 2% of breweries are solely owned by women. On brewery floors, 89% of brewers are white. In fact, the least white group of employees is non-managerial production staff at 76.2% white. By now, we all know this is a problem, and we all want it to change. But there are large structural problems in the way. Getting an education is expensive. Getting small business loans can be really, really difficult for people of color due to inherent biases in the commercial banking world. But our guests are all working to help overcome these hurdles in their own ways. This week, we've got Garrett Oliver, the brewmaster of Brooklyn Brewery, who has recently announced the Michael Jackson Foundation for Brewing and Distilling, which will grant people of color scholarships to further their education in brewing or distilling. Then we've got Tired Hands Brewing co-owner Julie Foster and brewer Christina Oliva, who discuss their brewery's Brewing Diversity Internship Program, which offers super hands-on, nitty-gritty brewing experience for women and people of color. Christina herself completed the program and is now a full-time brewer at Tired Hands. Then we've got Chula Vista Brewery founder and owner Tim Parker and Boston Beer Company's Director of Partnerships Jennifer Glanville, who also oversees Brewing the American Dream, which is a program that Samuel Adams founder Jim Cook started in 2008. Its goal is to provide capital and coaching to new entrepreneurs in food and beverage, hospitality, and brewing. The program started out being for all entrepreneurs, but because of those biases in banking, entrepreneurs in the program end up being quite diverse because they usually have a pretty hard time getting access to capital from traditional banks. Tim is one such entrepreneur, and he was selected a few years ago to receive a year of extended brewing and business coaching from the Boston Beer team through the Brewing the American Dream Brewing Experienceship Program. His brewery is one of very few Black-owned breweries in California, and he's getting ready to open up a second location. Our conversation talked a lot about structural barriers, mentoring, and the fanciful myth of self-made success. I hope you enjoy listening to the discussion as much as I enjoyed being a very, very small part of it.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Brewbound Frontlines, our weekly live stream check-in with beer industry leaders on the moves they're making in this fast-changing business climate amid the COVID-19 pandemic. I am Justin Kindle, and I'm the editor of Brewbound, and I'm joined, as always, coming to you from the most celebrated pineapple wall in New Jersey, my colleague on this socially distant social hour, Jess Infante. What's up, Jess?
Hey, Justin. Nothing. How are you?
I'm okay.
You'd be better with some pineapples, wouldn't you?
I think we'd all be better with pineapples. But we got to get moving. We've got a full house today, and we're here to discuss how the beer industry can bring in a more diverse workforce. This industry, unfortunately, it's made up of mostly people that look like me, and that's unfortunate. It should be more diverse than it is, and we're going to talk to people who are working hard to make those changes. So here today to discuss those efforts are Garrett Oliver, brewmaster at the Brooklyn Brewery. Thanks for being here, Garrett.
Good to see you guys.
We've got Julie Foster, the co-owner of Tired Hands Brewing Company in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. Thank you for being here, Julie.
Good afternoon.
We also have Christina Oliva, a brewer at Tired Hands. Thanks for being here, Christina.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us also is Jennifer Glanville, the Director of Partnerships at the Boston Beer Company. Thank you for being here, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me.
And last but not least, we have Tim Parker, the founder of Chula Vista Brewing in, where else? Chula Vista, California. Thanks for being here, Tim.
All right, thank you for having me.
So a quick plug for next week. We are going to be discussing hard seltzer trends with Danelle Cosmal, Nielsen's VP of Beverage Alcohol Practice, who will give us all the data. We will have Archie Gleason, who's the Vice President of Sales for Sycamore Brewing, which makes Bubb's Hard Seltzer. Then we'll have Amy Wahlberg, the co-founder of Press Premium Hard Seltzer, and Christian McMahon, the president of Wachusett Brewing Company, who makes Naughty and Country Hard Seltzer brands.
All right, let's go. Garrett, you recently launched the Michael Jackson Foundation for Brewing and Distilling. The focus of the foundation is a pair of scholarships, the Sir Jeff Palmer Scholarship Award for Brewing and the Nathan Green Scholarship for Distilling. Those awards will predominantly go to Black, Indigenous, and people of color within the brewing and distilling industries, or to people who are looking to join these industries. How did this program come together?
Well, this is actually an offshoot of a program that was developed about 20 years ago by the American Institute of Wine and Food. And at the time, the namesake of the foundation, Michael Jackson, was still with us, and he was a very good friend of mine. And they established this fund basically to fund education generally within brewing and distilling. And this is a long story and we won't belabor it here, but eventually other things rose, like say the James Beard Foundation, American Institute of Wine and Food wound down over time. And so this fund, which had about $30,000 in it, became moribund and was just sitting around. And last year, Tom Potter, who was one of the founders of Brooklyn Brewery, a later president of AIWF, and therefore is still sort of sitting with the fund, said to me, we would like to disperse this money and give it away. And he had ideas about how to do it. And I said, well, that's great, but I really, if I'm going to be involved with it, I want it to go predominantly to people of color. And we discussed that. And in the end, you know, Tom came around to my point of view and said, okay, I'll work with you to do that. And so we are looking to move that within an organization my brother is involved with, which is the Partridge Invitational Scholarship Foundation. And so we were just going to give away the $30,000, which, depending on what courses you're going to fund, you know, might help, say, 10 people. But I was thinking over time that this thing doesn't have to end, and we continue to have a problem. I was looking to address it, but very briefly, not in perpetuity. So I started thinking about how I could do that. At the time, I, up until this period, like many of us, was traveling a lot. I would often be in a dozen countries a year. It was completely normal for me. And between March and now, I would have been in 6 countries. So the time to actually slow down and think was the thing that was missing. I definitely saw other programs out there. I spoke to Joe Heron at Copper and Kings Distillery about their program about a year and a half ago. And he sent me all this material and I looked at it and I said, wow, that's like a whole other job. I can't do something like that. But you know, it's funny, the COVID crisis is obviously awful and it's crushed in many ways many of our businesses, but it has given everybody, for good or ill, some time to think. And so I started thinking about, well, what if I were to turn a lot of effort to making this thing real? So the foundation will fund ongoing education for people of color within the brewing and distilling industries, and then also people who are coming up into these industries, and hopefully over time be part of the solution of having a brewing and distilling industry that looks more like America and less like just one little slice of America.
Absolutely. And you've called the MJF an affirmative action meant to take our allied industries in a more positive and equitable direction for the future. You've been in this industry since the late 1980s. I think you were homebrewing even before then. How much progress have we made in that amount of time?
I would put it two ways. One answer is very little, which is just if you look at the numbers straight up, most places that you go, if you go to the Great American Beer Festival, you go anywhere. That's what you're going to see. You go into beer bars, you're going to see that, and you're going to see that in breweries as well. On the other hand, in the last 5 years, and I think we all know that most of the breweries in the United States have opened in the last 5 years, within those breweries, you see definitely more people of color than you used to. So it used to be there was another brewer who also, you know, has a long tenure in brewing in the United States. He doesn't look anything like me, but, you know, he's also African-American. And he used to have a joke because people used to come up to him and ask him whether he was Garrett. And he would say, no, I'm the other Black brewer. Which, you know, in most of the halls at the time, even if there were 10 or 20,000 people in there, was true. Like, that was the way that it was, and it was kind of a joke, but of course it wasn't funny. Now, today, you know, there are not only African-American-owned breweries, but many people of color that are working in the industry numbers-wise, but it does not look anything like America. America is, what, 12, 13% African-American. It's, you know, more than 15% Latino. It's 51, 52% women. Brewing doesn't look anything like America. And so, you know, we're only addressing a small part of that, at least at first. But I think that we would have better businesses and we would be happier as people within these businesses if our breweries actually look like America. But, you know, let's face it, most of our lives don't look like America either. We're not trying to be that way necessarily, but that's the way it actually is for almost everybody.
So we know there's a lot of structural issues that often are keeping, you know, people of color from starting businesses and things like that. Now, Jennifer, I know Boston Beer's Brewing the American Dream has been around since 2008 and provided loans to more than 2,000 small food and beverage businesses, not just craft breweries, but it started out to serve all entrepreneurs. However, because of biases in traditional commercial banking, it's often much more difficult for people of color to secure small business loans. So the business owners in the program are often very, very diverse. After more than a decade, how has the experience of the entrepreneurs in the program changed? Are they noticing that anything is easier for them these days? Or is it all kind of still the same?
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is Jim Cook, our founder and brewer, started this program in 2008. Because he recognized that when he was trying to start Sam Adams, there were two things he lacked, which was access to capital and sort of that good nuts and bolts business advice. The sad thing is fast forward to 12 years ago and really trying to identify ways he could help not only the brewing community and business starting, but food and beverage entrepreneurs. That was a similar thing that they were still didn't have access to. And so we founded Brewing the American Dream to start really recognizing that people were being taken in by predatory lenders and being denied loans and they weren't able to start their businesses. So getting that access to capital was critical. And then that business advice. And really over the last 6 to 12 months, we've been focused on the networking and how do we really create access to those networks, which can mean so much, you know, to distribution, to many things like that. And currently in our program, 40% of our Brewing the American Dream clients are women and 80% are people of color. So, you know, we really work hard to make sure that we're reaching out, that we're getting into the right areas where we can help the people who need it the most to get their business and breweries started or evolving them and growing them and helping them really kind of continue to drive that in their communities.
Malt Europe Malting Company is North American proud with premium grains from field to flavor. Our selections include base, specialty, and distillers malt varieties. Stop by our booth, 2143, at the Craft Brewers Conference in Vegas. Does your brewing software suck? We've heard it from thousands of brewers. Connect with Ollie today, and we'll buy out your current contract and hook you up with brewing software that doesn't suck. Visit booth 1685 at CBC or hit getollie.com/pod.
I know Brewing the American Dream is usually highlighted during the Great American Beer Festival. And this year, unfortunately, GABF isn't taking place in person. So how has the 2020 program been affected by COVID-19? It's really affected everything everywhere. So I assume there's been some effects on the program itself.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our coaching is done in person, and we're able to host events where we can really give people the one-on-one time with coaches, you know, in person. So we've gone virtual like everybody else out there. We've created a series of e-commerce webinars that we started immediately out as we were also learning to grow our own e-commerce business. So it was actually really a great process for both sides. And we had, you know, over 1,000 people on a couple of the webinars for that. So we really had to shift that piece of it. And now looking towards the end of the year, as everything's moving, you know, so fast every day, everything's changing, but really making sure that we can continue to offer that and make sure that people are aware that there are loans out there, that they can navigate the PPE, that they can navigate the small business associations of their states, and really utilizing a lot of their brewery guilds to help. And we've been working with a lot of the brewery guilds around in the states to make sure that they have access to things that can help these breweries that are constantly shifting their business model right now.
Tim, you went through the Brewing the American Dream program. How did you learn about it to start with? And then what did you learn through the coaching in the program that either surprised you or something that you would share with somebody else who might be considering going through the program?
All right. So I first heard about the Brewing American Dream. They actually sought me out from ASEAN. So they told me about it, filled out the paperwork. I was actually still active duty. So a lot of it goes to my wife, Dolly. So I was actually on the ship doing a lot of this and got the word while I was on the ship that we won. So ASEAN played a big part into, you know, letting us know about the program and introducing it to us. It helped a lot, actually, because transitioning from the military, that's all I knew, you know. And as soon as I was getting out, I was opening up the brewery, and to go into Sam Adams and basically tell me what I didn't know, because I didn't know what I didn't know, open up my door and open up my eyes to all this, you know, how to network, who to talk to, how to distribute, all this stuff I didn't know. I could tell you all about, you know, Navy stuff, but I really couldn't tell you about how to start a business, even though I was starting a business. So that helped me a lot that we continue to use to this day. And I think the biggest thing about it is that you can still call them up at any time and they will still help you out. So to be able to just, hey, send out an email to Sam Adams, like, hey, I got a question about this, and get a response very quickly. And, you know, not only a response, how can I help you? That's also great.
So, Julie, a few weeks ago, Marcus Baskerville from Weathered Souls Brewing was a guest on our program. We've talked to him a few times now about his Black is Beautiful collaboration initiative beer. He's leading that. And when we spoke with Marcus, he credited Tired Hands internship program with helping him come up in the industry. So how long has Tired Hands been running the program and what is the focus?
We started the internship program we launched it in 2017 and we had our first intern in 2018. And the purpose of the program was really to address the dearth of brewers of color, BIPOC in general, and women in the brewery. We've always had a commitment to having our staff reflect the demographics of our community. And we're kind of struggling to have our affirmative action policy really come to fruition. We adopted other things like the Rooney Rule to try to make sure we were getting a mix of candidates, and came across the challenge of finding brewers when we were putting out job positions. We were looking for people with some amount of experience, and we identified that as a barrier to entry to be able to hire more diverse people in the brewery. So we created this program to essentially have an entry-level opportunity and specifically focus on diversifying the people who are in the brewery on the floor. Something like 22% of breweries are owned by women, but only less than 8% of people who are brewers are women. Similarly, African-Americans, it's like 1% of breweries are owned by African-Americans, and like 0.5% of people on the brewery floor are. From my perspective as a woman in the industry, you know, I'm not on the brewery. I'm, you know, in the office doing paperwork stuff. A lot of us are in sales or front of house. So that was an important focus for us, to have people making the beer be reflective of our broader community and everyone who we hope enjoys the beer.
So Christina, you worked your way up through this internship program. You're a graduate of it. What did you learn in those 12 weeks, and how did this help you eventually become a full-time professional brewer?
So, oh gosh, what did I learn? Everything. I graduated from the Brewing Science Program at University of the Sciences in Philadelphia, a local program that I found out through doing a research project in college. That's the University of the Sciences is a graduate school program. And I learned really, really in-depth things about microbiology and how to engineer a brewery and build and design them. But then coming into the brewery, it's somehow a whole different world than what you learn on paper. Just simple things like, you don't learn in school how to wrestle hoses when you're rolling them up at the end of the day. You don't learn in school about heating and cooling tanks or cleaning tanks and using certain chemicals and things. So the internship program was amazing because I started day one right on the brewery floor, right in the mix, in the weeds on the canning line, grabbing cans off the end of the line, learning how to stack cans. It's amazing how little I knew. And then as time went on, it felt like I wasn't even an intern. I was just one of the people in the brewery. And because everybody was so welcoming and so excited to have somebody come up through the ranks like that, it was an absolutely seamless transition. I ended the brewery internship program on a Friday, and then the next Monday I was working full time. And it was, there was almost no difference because it was such a fast, wonderful transition from all the people who are working in the brewery here.
Congratulations. What a great success story. So Jennifer, I know Brewing the American Dream has a very special, what's called the experienceship for brewers, which, you know, Tim graduated from that program. Can you just give us a little bit more detail on it? Because I feel as though I may have glossed over it because I know about it. So why don't you explain for our audience what it is?
Sure. Yeah. We've had since 2012, the Brewing and Business Experienceship. And as Tim talked about, we have a brewer who, it's an application process. A brewery will win and they get a year's worth of coaching and mentoring, which as Tim alluded to, it's actually a lifetime of coaching and mentoring. They come to Boston, we work on a collaboration brew together. So they work in our nano brewery. They have full access for the week to our brewers there, our supply chain, and they can speak with anybody in the organization. They get a bunch of time with Jim. What we really found about that is that coaching and mentoring, and as Christina alluded to, I mean, when I went to brewing school, I came back full of like excitement for just, you know, everything I had learned, not realizing that I was about to start learning everything as soon as I got on the floor, right? So we know that from my own personal experience and working on this program. I was a coach for these brewers for many, many years before I took over the program. And it's that real life experience that we can get. And frankly, I mean, I always learn a lot from our brewery's winners too, because you're constantly learning and evolving. And we also started an internship similar to what Julie has. And what's been great about that is currently it's about 22% of our interns have been hired at our Boston brewery, but we've been as high as 50%. So it's really important to make sure you have that access to get these great interns in here and encourage them to, you know, work in there. And then, you hope to hire them full time afterwards.
You guys have mentioned the coaching portion of the Brewing the American Dream program. Garrett, one of the facets of the MJF scholarship program is a mentorship component. And you recently wrote on Twitter about how you've been thinking more and more about mentorship access and you called it the corrosive American myth of the self-made man. And this sort of leads back to, I think, something that you wrote in 2007, I believe. Can you extrapolate a little more on those thoughts?
Well, I think that, you know, if you grew up in the United States, this is a myth that's promulgated by many people, from politicians to business owners, where, you know, they gain their success largely or entirely through their own determination, fierce intelligence, grit, et cetera. They pull themselves up by their bootstraps and whatever other cliche you want to come with. And that does not include anything that came behind it, like money that you might have inherited from your parents or that you could borrow from friends or whatever else from a financial point of view. It also doesn't include things like the advice that you were given by the people that you know in your community and your surroundings and your family and the people that you have access to give you that advice and the people who are reaching out to you. And so, you know, in a lot of the African-American community, you may have a lot of brilliant people, but because of societal forces, they haven't had access to all these things. And so I thought it was very important that if you're going to give somebody a program, you say, okay, we're sending you on the MBAA packaging course. You know, good luck. bye, see you later. That has been proven within many educational institutions and inside of companies, et cetera. It doesn't work because people end up in a room or in a society or in a business of people who don't look like them, can't necessarily easily identify with them in many ways, and they need somebody to talk to. So in our program, when you get a scholarship, it will come with a mentor. And if for some reason that relationship doesn't work, we'll find you another one. But your mentor will be a person of color who's already in the industry. And not that I won't be there, but I mean, really, if you're gonna ask me how to get into the brewing industry, I don't know. you know, because I got into the brewing industry 30 years ago. Like, what advice am I really going to give you? I can sit there and go blah, 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 blah. And it's all going to be, in some ways, self-serving blather, which is what most people who have already made their climb are going to give you. So what we're going to give you is a mentor who just cut through the same weeds that you're about to cut through, you know, and this is immediate experience and be able to talk to you. I ran into this as a roadblock, and we will provide contacts and all of the goodies that we have. But I think it's important, if you're going to do this work, not to self-center yourself in the work. You know, the people you're trying to help are the people you're trying to help. And I was reading somebody recently who said, you know, if you're trying to do something to help people and those actual people can't eat it, can't spend it, you know, can't use it to get a better job, can't, guess who the beneficiary is? The beneficiary is you. You're the beneficiary. So we want to make sure that whatever we do, that we keep our eyes on the target, which is that the beneficiary is in fact the person that we're looking to help. And then we remove ourselves, you know, from the center of that equation. And there will be metrics. We'll figure out, did we help you? And if we did help you, then can you help this person? And hand that down in a way that makes sense. Because I didn't become Garrett Oliver, whatever that is, by myself. Michael Jackson was one of those people. I sat here on a Zoom meeting with the namesake of our brewing scholarship, Sir Jeff Palmer, of Harriet Watt, you know, in Scotland, who has spent 40 plus years as one of the top civil rights activists in the UK, and is also the top brewing professor in the UK. And he talked to me for 2 hours about how to do this work. And it was already 9 o'clock. He's 80, and it's already 9 o'clock in the UK when we started our phone conversation. And the guy is just a badass. And so I'm learning from him at my age, and he's 80. And then, you know, I can say something to somebody who is 40, which sounds old to me, but that just means that I'm old. And then they can be talking to somebody who's coming up in their 20s. So I think that it's important that, you know, you kind of realize that, you know, you can't be and do everything. You need people and a structure. And I'm sure that you guys who are already doing some of this work already know that.
Have you lined up those mentors, and what's the timeline for the first awards to go out?
I'd like to see the first awards go out towards the end of this year or the beginning of next year. Obviously, different programs have different periods. Most educational institutions have not even quite figured out 100% how they are going to deal with our new world under the pandemic. We certainly hope that within a year or two, things return to some sort of normalcy, where it's easier to have a hands-on environment, but people are figuring it out. And by the time we are actually set up with a strong enough structure, we feel, and a board that's making the decisions and an application process, and that's already in the works, and we're able to say, okay, these are our first crop of awardees, that they will look at, okay, when is this course starting? It's starting in 2 months, it's starting in a few weeks, whatever else. And then I'm already talking to the educational institutions themselves to figure out what they're able to do. You know, can you fit it? If you're oversubscribed, do you have room for an extra person that you weren't planning on, especially now that it's not as hands-on? You know, so those things are certainly, you know, a work in progress from a standing start, but I've sat on a number of boards before. I was one of the founders for Slow Food USA and on the original board, and we set up the national office. And right now I'm Museum of Food and Drink, and obviously been at it for a long time. So we'll have a very strong board, and their opinions and backgrounds will not be the same as mine.
So on the topic of mentoring, I know how important it can be in the industry. And Jennifer is actually one of my own. I know, you know, if you watch Brewbound stuff enough, you've probably heard me mention that I used to work at Sam Adams, and I started as a tour guide, and Jennifer was the brewery manager, was the person I met on day one. So Jennifer and Julie, I'd like to talk to you guys a little bit about how you incorporate mentoring relationships in your current professional lives, and what does a successful mentor-mentee partnership look like? So Ms. Jennifer, why don't you take it away?
Sure, thanks. You know, it's very interesting because people always ask, you know, when you started, who was your mentor? And there was one other woman who worked at the brewery part-time at the time. And Jim really just said to me, look for mentors that can really help you and help you with what you want to learn and how you want to grow. And what I've been pleased to see, and I would agree with Gary, we haven't made nearly enough progress, as that's why we're here today talking about it, is that now I really have an opportunity when I have people working either at the brewery or part of any other part of our organization, we can really find the right mentor that is more of a match with them, because there are challenges that other people won't understand if they haven't walked the walk or been in the same shoes that you've been in. So it's really important for us to do that internally at our organization for our brewery interns. And then for our brewery internship, what's great about that is that for the experienceship with Brewing the American Dream, we can provide them with multiple coaches to help them around different areas. So it can be regional, it could be. So I think making sure that you have someone who you feel very comfortable with, and then also making sure that you have more than one. You can have many mentors and you're going to need them in your life to be successful, because you will want to have a mentor on brewing technical skills. You want to have a mentor on, you know, other things that you're working on. So making sure you don't limit yourself and be very open-minded, but also seek them out. If people don't provide them for you, seek them out, find them in your organization, find them in the industry. There's so many ways to get connected with people today.
Awesome. Julie, how do you see yourself as a mentor within Tired Hands? And then who did you seek out to be mentors to you when you first got into the industry?
That's a good question. Technically, I'm a lawyer, so my background is not specifically in brewing. I'm a devoted home brewer, but I did get inspiration from the legal field to create this internship program. In our region in Philadelphia, there's a program for law students where it's a blind application process, and it's open to BIPOC students and students with disabilities to try to increase their ranks in the legal field. And so that was a good framework for us to start from to create the internship program. When thinking about this program, we operated for 5 years before doing any sort of internship whatsoever, in large part because you need to have the resources to be able to commit to invest in somebody. Just having, you know, unpaid labor isn't cool. That's not really creating an opportunity or supporting people. So we spent quite a bit of time to make sure that we had staff and a team available to be able to give someone training and teaching opportunities. But the other thing that concerns me a lot when we talk, I almost don't like the word diversity to some extent. It's because it can lend itself to tokenism almost, or like, okay, we have the Benetton ad of people here. We're fine. We've done our part. And that's not really what it's about. It's about having a community of diverse voices who are part of your culture. Something that we've learned from higher education is you can have a diverse looking roster when it comes to statistics, but whether or not you're setting those students up for success, there's inclusion, there's mentorship, and also systems set up to support those people once they are part of your community. Christine actually started by coincidence the day that we were doing our fairness and equality training. So one of the ways that we try to have a culture that is mindful of what everybody brings to the table and considerate of each other's needs. But if you don't mind, just, I'm curious what Christina has to say about her experiences with mentorship, since I'm not on the brewery floor. I'm one of the women in the office.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. So Christina, who or what inspired you to get into the industry?
So as I mentioned, I had gone through the brewing science program at University of the Sciences, but I discovered that through a research project that I was doing undergrad at Drexel University. I actually am a mechanical engineer. I graduated with a degree in it. And one of the things I became painfully aware of while I was there was that there were very, very few women in the program. It's funny that we mentioned 8% of women are brewers on the brewing floor, because 8% of the people that graduated my class were women. Interesting parallel there. But my design project for my engineering senior design project was centered around creating a more environmentally friendly way to clean and sanitize brewing vessels. And we went very, very far with the project. We were very successful within our own institution. We submitted a patent on what we had invented. But to circle back to the question I had before, what did I learn? I learned that what we invented is actually so not practical. But it did get me into the position that I am today, because through that, I found this program and it made me think, okay, I did all of this research independently on breweries and all of these things that have to do with beer production. Where can I go with this? Hence the Brewing Science program and then the Tired Hands Diversity Internship program. And when I came here, as I mentioned, really everybody on the brewing floor was so welcoming and so happy to have me there, because I think really institutionally at Tired Hands, there is a serious recognition that the people represented in the brewing field are not the people who are consumers necessarily. And I mean, specifically, I would say that my director right now, Bridget, is a wonderful mentor because she's been so open and helpful with all of the things, every question I've ever had, so welcoming because she's also, you know, one woman on the team and has had a lot of experience and really understands what it's like, honestly, being in somewhat of a boys club of the overall brewing industry. I wouldn't say that's particularly the case at Tired Hands, luckily, which is wonderful. But I would say specifically mentors within the brewing field as well would be the people who were at the University of the Sciences. I really found inspiration in the other women who were in the program because, again, it was not particularly diverse. There's still a barrier to getting people who are not the typical brewing makeup to go into these programs because it seems to be not even an option. People like me don't even think, oh, brewing, that's something I like. That's something I'm interested in. I'm good at science. I could be really, really good at this. My skills can be so transferable because it does still seem a little bit reserved for a certain type of person. And I would honestly say I've seen, even over the past year, a bit of change with that, just because I've seen how the brewing science program has changed. I've seen within my own personal circles how people realize that this is something that is so universally enjoyed beer and is so not universally represented. And I'm just very thankful that I've had these wonderful people, as everybody else has echoed in their sentiments. It's wonderful to have multiple people who are really there on your side, in your court, shooting for you. It's great.
Tim, who or what inspired you to follow this career path that you're on now? Where did your beer journey begin?
So two parts to that. First, I would have to give kudos to my first chief in the Navy, Chief Ringling, who kind of opened my eyes. That goes back to something Garrett said earlier. When I first joined the Navy, I was the only Black guy in my shop as a search and rescue swimmer. So I was alone, you know, and I come from Chicago. I was born and raised in the projects. When I saw white people, I was afraid. That the honest truth, I was afraid. So when I walked into that shop, I had an initial thought that everybody was the enemy. But Chief Ringling really pulled me to the side, mentored me and brought me in and, you know, and showed me the ways to make my career so successful to this day. So he was my mentor that guided me to where I'm at that moment in time 20 years ago, well, now 21 years ago, guided me to where I'm at today. When I got into craft beer, believe it or not, it's just coincidence that this all happened, come full circle. It was Sam Adams. My first beer was Sam Adams that I was ordered to drink by my CEO. I hated beer at the time. He ordered me to drink it. So I follow orders. But that got me into craft beer, traveling the world, drinking beer from all around the world. I just fell in love with beer. So it was natural for me once I decided I wanted to get out of the Navy at 20 years to go into craft beer. But one of the most important things what Garrett kind of brought up as well is what is the road for us to get into the industry? And to be honest, I just got to open up a brewery 3 years ago and I don't truly have an answer. You know, I didn't go to the beer industry and say, hey, you know, let me in. I just decided to let myself in. You know, here I am. I didn't know any. San Diego has like 150 breweries that kind of went down lately, but we didn't have not one brewery in our community, not one. Of all of San Diego, 150. So, you know, when I decided to open up here in Chula Vista, it was truly for our community. You know, and that's what my focus is on, is that's been this community. Opening up the second brewery in this community. And everybody like, why are you opening up in Chula Vista? Well, Chula Vista is the second largest city in San Diego County. And my one brewery do not cover all of Chula Vista. So I want to cover all of Chula Vista and help my community out, you know? you got 150 breweries in your community. Right now I got two. So, you know, that's what my focus is at, is focus on my community and helping introduce craft beer to my community and growing the industry. But to have a true answer on what path to take, I really can't tell you, especially when you come to one of the beer brewer. I could tell you all about being an owner more than I could tell you about a beer brewer because I'm not down there brewing every day. I'm trying to run a business. So it depends on, you know, what path you take. All depends on where you're going and then finding that right mentor. But like they said, you can't do it alone. You know, I had my wife there because I was still active duty. So who you think was doing all this work when I was coming up with these crazy ideas? It was my wife. I got Alex, who's my banker, you know. He believed in me and he didn't know me, but he believed in me and he offered to help me out. And to this day, he still gives me mentorship on the business side. So you get mentorship from all over the place. And a lot of people don't realize that that's probably the most important factor into owning a business, running a business, and then making a successful business is having the right people around you, guiding you in the right direction.
So Tim, when you were first getting started, I'm curious as to how many years before you realized you wanted to leave the Navy, did you decide you wanted to start the brewery? And then to get the brewery started, you needed capital. Like you had to figure out cost and a commercial lease. What was your experience like in securing all of those things?
It was actually pretty hard for multiple reasons. My story, like I said, a little bit different because I was still active military and that was my primary focus. I knew 5 years before I hit 20 that I wanted to get out. So I was like, all right, 5 years is right around the corner because 15 years just passed like nothing. So I realized that I needed to start planning now. So at that 5-year mark, it took me 3 years to actually get the brewery open. So I opened up the brewery while I was still active duty. So I just got out last year, which was funny. I wanted to bring up to Garrett. I seen him speak at GABF. I was sitting right in front. But I was clean cut, so you probably don't recognize me. But it was me and my wife sitting in front. He blew my mind. That was my first time seeing him, so I want to say thank you, Dad. So it took me 5 years, really, you know, to get this going and meeting all the right people. But it honestly, ASEAN helped a lot. So I met a couple bankers who believed in my story, and they guided me towards ASEAN. ASEAN guided me towards, Boston Brewery. And it was just so many people, just the stars aligned that everybody believed in me and kind of started pushing me in the right direction because I had no idea. Literally, it was like I just decided, hey, I think I want to go the brewery direction and decided to move forward with that. And then the right people stepped in front of me to guide me to where I'm at today.
Christina, we talked a little bit about your education. And one of the questions that I'd like to ask is how much did it cost to get an education that's led you to become a professional brewer as, you know, one of the three professional brewers on here, you know, and most recently going through that process. How much does it cost to be a brewer these days?
So the program that I went to for brewing school required a Bachelor of Science. So that, of course, ranges depending on where you go. I was very fortunate that I had a scholarship for rowing and for academics. So that was honestly a huge thing that got me to where I am right now and is something I completely and fully recognize. And it's something that I think we as an industry need to take into account because that is not something that most people get. I mean, we know it is so, so difficult for so many people in this country to get an education, even get a decent education as young children and teenagers, and to get the capital to go to college is sometimes impossible for people, which is such a shame. And I'm so fortunate and recognize my privilege in that. I also recognize that I was very privileged to be able to pay for the graduate course. That was about the cost of a tuition of a year's worth of college. So again, it depends on where you go to college for undergrad, for how much that would cost. But for the graduate school program, it was about another year's worth of college.
Garrett, we've talked a little bit about access here, and give us a little more context on how we can level this playing field and get more people the access to this industry, the education they need. I mean, we're talking about the programs that will pay for some of it, but it's just a fraction of what's ultimately going to be a lot of debt, as people point out.
Yes. And, you know, and I have to say, if Christina's resume CV, you know, had come to me, we would have snapped her up instantly. You know, the next two people at Brooklyn Brewery under me, you know, are women. One of them actually, who Jennifer probably knows, Taylor Honda, who's, you know, kind of running so many things these days, and she's a wonder. And we've had a lot of people who've gone through our programs, and they came out of refugee programs. So I have sent Gambians to brewing school. I've sent Iraqis to brewing school. But I can tell you this, I have not had a single African-American applicant for a brewing job in 30 years. So here's the thing. What I'm discovering, and this includes me as a Black man in this industry, you know, they have that old thing that's saying that insanity is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. You know, and I think that a lot of us are doing the same thing. I go looking through resumes and I want to see a resume like Christina's. As Julie pointed out, that already then cuts off a huge number of people. And so what we're doing here is trying to cut to the quick so that to some extent, we are going to manufacture, if you want to use that term, the kinds of people that everybody wants to see, because everybody wants to see a resume like Christina's. And if you don't have, say, $10,000 for the American Brewers Guild course, we've hired like 15 people out of that program. We started doing internships for ABG back in 2000 and 2001. Linus, who runs Yazoo, was here for 9/11, and he was our intern. You know, that's how long we've been at it, and yet we've seen no African-Americans. I would point out, and this is important, I think, for all of us, and it's a hard thing to look at, there's a big difference between who we are and who we think we are and who we say we are and who we really are. And I think that you have to figure that out. There was a book by the guy who has the dating thing, OkCupid, and he wrote a book which was all about what people say they're looking for and what they actually click on. You know, and it turns out they don't look anything like each other. People have very, very little insight into what makes them choose various people. And so it takes a lot of digging, you know, to remove the bias that you can't see in yourself. And so we are trying to think about that, one, and secondly, short-circuit it by bringing people up and saying, okay, here is this person that you say you've been looking for who has this certificate that you've been looking for and that you value, and I have value, and this person's very, very smart, and they're in front of you, will you take them? I would love to be presented with that opportunity, and I'm not being presented with the opportunity even to hire people, you know, who are ready to step into the brew house. And so you have to actually do work to give those people the tools so they can step in the door. There are many, many ways of doing this. You can say, okay, we have an entry-level position. That's a great way to do it. Not every brewery has that entry-level position. You have four or five people in a fast-moving brewery. Everybody's got to like row straight into the stream sometimes. And it can be a luxury to have somebody who just starts on the kegging line or whatever else. And so, yeah, all these things become important. And I just want to make it clear that like the path that I'm taking is not like the path or the only path. It's just a path that I can see and I can understand.
So how do you get those applications? How do we get more of those applications at the Brooklyn Brewery? How do we get more of them at Tired Hands? How do we get more of them at Boston Beer? How do we get them at Chula Vista?
Certainly, I have an outreach plan, and in that we are actually linking to other organizations that are doing their own outreach, and we're going to feed each other people. So I've got like whole groups of African American professionals in wine who say, "Oh, we're doing this, you know, in the wine community, but we have people who are interested in beer." I'm like, send them my way. I have people who come in who are interested in other fermentations. I send them to Canada. It's like, okay, I don't have this thing right here. My thing is like this big and these are my parameters. but who you need is this person, and then follow them in the door and make sure they actually arrive there and get what it was they were looking for. Don't like just forward an email and say goodbye. You know, follow them until they're inside the door.
Julie, how do we get more of those applicants into Tired Hands?
That's actually something we've talked about, an idea to have a program that connects with other breweries around the country. One of the exciting things and one of the goals of our program was that we wouldn't be the only ones who were doing it, that other breweries around the country would also make a commitment to diversifying their brewery team. And over the past few years, we have heard from dozens of different breweries that are doing just that, which is amazing. One of the resources that might help make that more powerful could be to combine efforts, as Garrett was saying, ideally within the brewing world, but maybe even beyond that. You're broadening my horizons here, thinking about it bigger. The one barrier that we've come up against in executing on that idea is actually something that you said yesterday, Garrett, about really doing it well would be someone's full-time job. So ideally, we're going to keep having those conversations. It's the start of an idea that we've been talking about with a few folks who've come to us who are interested in the program. But if there are other breweries out there that want to do this, we're really excited about it and definitely interested in coming up with some new ways and ideas to approach it.
Jennifer, how do we amplify these efforts such as Brewing the American Dream or the Michael Jackson Scholarship Fund or internship programs like at Tired Hands and ensure that the people that you guys are aiming these programs at are actually hearing about them and know about them and know to apply to these?
Yeah, I mean, I think Garrett and Julie really hit a lot of that on the head. I think what's really important is it doesn't have to be in the brewing industry to find good applicants for the brewing industry, right? So utilize other partners, other networks, other types of organizations that you can partner with to help, because it's that access, it's that reach and that networking and that access. And, you know, that's where there's a lot of the disconnect. You know, we want a more diverse applicant pool. We're not getting it. So do we just sit back and hope that we do someday? No, we have to really dive in and figure out how do we reach people who we think would be a great fit for the industry. And, you know, a lot of it even starts, like Christina was talking about. I mean, I will tell you, when I went to college, nobody said, Jennifer, do you want to be a brewer? That would have been awesome. And I would have had a couple years head start, but that didn't happen because it wasn't thought of that way. So, you know, making sure we're reaching folks who are, exceptional folks in the sciences who want to work in here, and also not just limiting it to brewing. I mean, the entire industry is not particularly diverse, right? So there's a lot of opportunities within the brewing industry, not just for brewers, for folks to get in there. So we have to work together. We have to get that outreach and give them more access to what's available.
So we are all stuck in this pandemic, and it's putting major financial strain on small businesses, especially breweries. What kind of support do minority business owners and employees need at this time? And how do we prevent really important initiatives like the ones that you guys are all working on from ending up on the corporate chopping block at a time when the industry is just trying to stay afloat? So, Jennifer, why don't we start with you? What kind of support do entrepreneurs and BTAD need right now because of the pandemic?
Yeah, the one thing we've been reaching out a lot, I've been reaching out for several months and just getting feedback because, you know, it is changing quite a bit, but it seems the one theme that has been maintained over the past 4 months was that it's really getting information that's up to date and how they can work with their employees. You know, nobody wants to lay off their employees or furlough them. So how can you utilize anything coming from the SBA or the PPE? So we've been working and with partners to get the word out nationally around, how do you get this information? What educational resources are available? And then separately, you know, there's an opportunity for many breweries to use more e-commerce that they weren't focused on prior. And so we've been working that, food and beverage as well. And then also working to be creative around what is in each state around the laws, because even each community is a little bit different, or each county. So really making sure, and does it make sense from a business perspective? Sometimes opening up your doors may not make sense, in the way that you thought, and maybe the to-go option is the best option, even if you could have 25%, or maybe the 25%. So making sure they have all those resources and everything they can do to make the best decision for themselves, their family, their community, and their employees.
Tim, what kind of support could you have used over the past few months? What's helping keep you guys afloat right now?
So I got a couple of things. So one is being in touch with, as a small business, you definitely should be in touch with your local banks, and they should know who you are when you walk through the door. For small businesses trying to get through, you know, Chase or Bank of America is hard, but getting through your neighborhood bank is very easy. So for us, that was important that we had already had those relationships. So we didn't have any issues of getting more funding or whatever we need from the bank. In most cases, they was actually reaching out to us, asking us, how can we help? Even ASAL reached out to us, hey, how can we help? So having those relationships, especially for a small business, is very important during these times. And past COVID, it's also important to have. So as you grow, you can continue to have them in your back pocket to, you know, get funding to grow. So even during COVID, we've been growing. So we still opening up the second location. We moved into Canon. We wasn't canning anything before COVID because everything was sold off the top 100%. Not until COVID that we pivot. But, you know, having access to the capital is very important. So you should already have that access and not wait until COVID happened to, you know, to try to figure out how to get it. So that's what helped us out a lot.
Julie, has the pandemic affected Tired Hands internship program at all?
It has. This year, we did not have an intern come into the brewery. We are expecting to be able to do that next year. But with the crisis, our county in Pennsylvania was actually the first one in our state that was shut down. So we've been affected since early March and really had to limit the number of people who can come into our buildings for safety reasons.
That totally makes sense. How many interns have you guys had so far?
Christina's our second.
Great. Very nice. And then your first intern, are they brewing somewhere else?
Yes. She is at a brewery in New Jersey. For some reason, New Jersey is a hot hub for us, even though we're not allowed to send beer there.
Funny. So Garrett, you're starting a new program during a pandemic. I'm sure there's so many challenges that come along with that. So what are the challenges and obstacles that you're facing right now? How is fundraising going?
The fundraising hasn't actually, you know, started yet. We're probably going to start next week. I intended to start yesterday, and this is part of the limitations. I mean, things, as we will have noticed around us, simply are moving more slowly than they normally do. People are not only busy, their offices may be thinned out. If you're dealing with, say, donor websites like GoFundMe or whatever else, well, guess what? In the middle of the pandemic, they have 4, 5, 6 times as many people trying to start up GoFundMes as they normally would. So everything, it's summertime. Everything slows down to something of a crawl. And so the fast pace at which you may wish to do things doesn't really happen the way that you want. That said, you know, we've built a website and we've done all this, you know, financial work and everything else. We want to make sure our I's and our T's are dotted and crossed because, you know, we take people's money seriously, whether it's corporate money or it's individual money. And if you give us $50, well, you know, you work somewhere at a job for that $50, maybe even a job that you don't even like. And we have to honor that $50 and drive in a direction, you know, towards the goal that we said that we're going to, you know, and commit ourselves to it. So, you know, the fact that most of us have in at least some way, shape or form, maybe more time than we did before, I've been working on this for the last week, about 16 hours a day. This morning, I did a lot of brewery work. I did recipes and whatever else. But then until 9 o'clock tonight, this is all that I'm doing to stand this thing up. And, you know, we have so many great people that I've heard from who want to be a part of it in various ways. I have former employees that are like, I want to teach this, I want to teach that. What can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And, you know, that's a beautiful thing. So what I'm trying to do is, you know, I'm not going to claim that I know as much about Jennifer or, you know, or Julie or someone else about how to do this work. The thing that I'm sure about is that, one, it is work. You know, it's not like being a nice person. You know, that actually has very little to do with it. It's good, but I'm a nice person too. That has not gotten me any African-American applicants in 30 years. You know, everything that I'm doing is trying to push in that direction, pandemic or no. And then we just figure out, well, how do we go around the problems, you know, that have been created? And the schools will figure that out. All we have to do is look at the schools and make sure that the certificate that they turn out is worth what it was before the pandemic. So each one of these programs that you may even be familiar with, you'll have to analyze that program and say, well, has this gone from being a good program to being kind of thin and sketchy? Or have they really robustly rebuilt this so that when that certificate comes to me attached to this person, I still respect it the way I would have, you know, before? And no one person, you know, can do all of that. I learned that doing the Oxford book. I had 166 writers from 28 countries. Nobody can write the Oxford Companion to Beer. It's not possible. And so this is a group effort, and I'm only the head of it because I'm the loudest and the oldest. But also important, and I'll finish here, I will be doing this for 5 years. And after 5 years, you know, I will step down. I will not run again. I will not accept the chair again. I'll always be there if you want to talk to me, but I will not be in charge. You know, and I think that's very important. This will be handed down to maybe somebody like Tim, you know, who's like younger, faster, brighter, and just got into this, you know, and then he can do it, you know, or she can do it, or somebody else can do it. But, you know, if you think that it's about you, you're almost always wrong.
Well, we are in overtime at this point, but before we go, I want to have each of you plug your different programs. And so I want to make sure that Garrett gets some of those applications. Garrett, how can people find out more about the Michael Jackson Foundation and get involved? And how can those resumes that you're looking for get to you?
Well, as of right now, people can easily reach me through Instagram, @iGarrettOliver. Somebody else named Garrett Oliver somehow got Garrett Oliver, so I'm @iGarrettOliver on Instagram. And then as of next week, in fact, right now, you can send me an email at Garrett@TheMJF, the Michael Jackson Foundation, Garrett@TheMJF.org.
Excellent. Julie, I know you guys didn't run the intern program, like you said, but for those who are looking to possibly apply in the future, how can they find out more information about the program?
We post the opportunity at our website, tiredhands.com. There's a jobs link. We also are active on Instagram. We usually announce it a couple times. We do try recruiting at our local community colleges, HCBUs, universities, as well as brew schools. So it's anyone who's interested in a career in brewing is, we're interested in you. And if you run a brewery and are interested in this kind of program, also feel free to contact me, julie@tiredhands.com. We love to talk about it, and we're excited to see this kind of effort grow.
Jennifer, before we get out of here, where can folks learn more about Brewing the American Dream?
You can go to brewingtheamericandream.com. You can go to samueladams.com. We have job listings. We have links there. And please, you know, utilize the resources to either apply for a job or to grow and or start your brewery business.
Tim, where can folks find out more about Chula Vista Brewing?
You can just go to chulavistabrewery.com, or you can hit us up on Instagram or Facebook. And I just want to point out one point thing I felt like we missed out about this community and growing the industry is we have to introduce people to craft beer as well. And that's my primary focus, is going to these communities and introducing craft beer to them so that they want to get into the industry.
That's a fair point, and that's definitely an important one that we did miss. Finally, I'll give you the last word here. Christina, where can folks get your beers, or what would you like to promote before we get out of here?
I would like to promote Black Lives Matter, and I would like to promote Tired Hands Beer, which you can find in Ardmore, PA at the Ferenteria, or you can find in Philadelphia in Fishtown at St. Owners, another place, a restaurant connected to Tired Hands. That's about it.
And that was this week's Frontlines. As always, you can catch Brewbound Frontlines every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern at brewbound.com and on Brewbound's YouTube channel and Facebook page. If you watch live, you can submit questions via text message, and Justin or I will ask the panelists for you. If you can't watch it live, you can always listen to it right here on the Brewbound podcast on the podcast platform of your choosing. Next week, we'll be talking all about hard seltzer and how it's basically become an unstoppable force in the world of alcoholic beverages. Huge thank you to all of you for listening, the Brewbound Audiovisual Squad, Justin, and this week's panelists for all the work that they're doing to make beer a better place. We will see you next week. Until then, stay safe, drink good beers, enjoy some sunshine, and we'll see you later.